Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to 100 sales leaders around the world to understand the impact of COVID-19 on revenue. And we've combined these insights into one single report that covers the immediate impact, the commercial outlook, the tech stack that you need, and actionable advice for sales leaders. You can claim this whole report completely for free if you go to ebster.com/COVID. That's ebster.com/COVID.
You're now tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
X about me.
You have to be closing all the time.
Always be closing.
I love what I do. When you love what you do, you want to be the best at it.
The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Learn from thought leaders in sales operations. Actionable strategies from Sales Ops Ninjas. And now, your hosts, Tom Hunt and Henry Peacock. Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. We're today joined by Dan Grossberg, who is currently running sales operations, or is the director of sales operations at Seven Rooms. And according to Dan's LinkedIn profile, he makes and breaks things. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Tom.
So first thing, I really like your... If anyone's listening to this, go to LinkedIn and then type in Dan Grossberg and then go to Dan's LinkedIn profile. The tagline where most people normally have like influencer, head of sales, etc. Dan just has, I make and break things. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that, Dan, and how you think that is what sales operations does, if you do?
Yeah, so I think by putting that out there, it shows a little bit more about my personality. So like I do like to have a lot of fun with the work that I sort of do. But yeah, I certainly think that aligns with what I do and at least how I approach sales operations. At a high level, sales operations is there to solve some problems, right? And sometimes you're going to need to break down current processes or break down walls between different departments so that they communicate better, and then build up by enabling teams, giving them new processes, new technologies to use. So I thought that was a pretty short, fun way to narrow that down.
Sure. And I think you've had about 9 years in the sales ops game. So can you, I think you shifted in from being a business analyst, right? So can you explain how and why you did that?
Sure. Yeah. So I kind of fell into the sales operations team sort of by accident, I suppose. Like I started in sales and then moved to that business analyst role, and really honed in on this natural curiosity that I had, like just trying to figure out how things work. So being a business analyst was great there because I was playing with lots of data, I was running a lot of reports and doing a little bit of project management. But then when I got introduced to the world of Salesforce administration, that like really opened up my eyes and that helped me understand a lot more about how businesses operated what makes things move. So it was kind of like a natural progression to move from business analyst to sales operations. And I was fortunate enough where my manager at the time, who was the sales ops manager, left the company. So there was that opportunity presented to me. So I, you know, stepped up to the plate and jumped in that role, and that's kind of where I've been since.
Got it. And I assume you have no plans to leave the sales ops world.
I mean, I love it. There's certain days where I'm like, maybe I could do something else, like pottery or do some woodworking. But no, I really do enjoy being able to peel back the curtain a bit and help companies move. So I really do enjoy operations.
I'm going to check back in with you in 12 months, Dan. And if you're not doing pottery, I'm going to be really disappointed. Zooming into today, Seven Rooms, how many reps are you currently responsible for and how many people in the sales ops team?
Sure. So we have 3 folks in the sales ops team, including myself. And there are 35 sellers. Actually, no, we just jumped up. So there's about 40 sellers right now and we have 12 SDRs.
Got it. And so a recent jump in the number of reps. Can you tell us about the onboarding process? Anything that you've learned recently that could be valuable to the listeners?
Sure. So the onboarding process is pretty interesting for the sales reps. Everybody at SevenRooms has about a 2-week onboarding process. And the first week is pretty much the same regardless of the role that you have. And that's learning about the company itself, learning about the culture, the reason that we exist and who we're trying to help and what we're trying to sell for. But for the sales onboarding for week two, there's a ton of shadowing that goes on, not just from sales folks themselves, but they're also shadowing other areas of the business. So they're listening in on customer success calls, customer support as well, and sitting in with marketing meetings to get like a real rounded approach and understanding of the pains that we're trying to solve for. And I think that's extremely helpful in getting folks to sell because, you know, essentially what you're trying to do is solve problems. And I think that gets up to speed much quicker, seeing all different areas of our customers.
I totally agree with that point. And I think so many reps or businesses will benefit by having their sales reps before they kick off, like reaching out, actually understand more about the business as opposed to just being like chucked in, learning the product in onboarding and then trying to sell. So I think that's a massive, massive point. Anything on rep productivity or actually from the last 9 years, can you remember like a single thing or new process that you implemented that had a massive impact on how much time reps could spend selling?
Yeah, so the past few companies where I've seen a lot of time being eaten up, it has been around the whole contracting process. So like CPQ, for example, especially my past two roles, I have been able to come in and streamline that tremendously. So not only saving reps times and generating up their contracts and sending them out for signature, and then all the administrative work that needs to happen after that, been able to utilize essentially the Salesforce platform to build this out without needing to buy any ridiculously expensive tools. You know, relieving the pain of having to copy and paste things into your Word document templates and sending them out. Those have been like some of the lowest hanging fruit and the easiest steps that have the biggest impact that I've noticed. And it's kind of, I mean, those are sort of the things that like when I roll them out and you get like the smiles like, oh my gosh, this is so much easier to do. You have no idea. And I mean, actually, I do have an idea. Like I've lived that world a little bit, so I know how painful it could be. But those are some of my favorite ones to roll out, you know, super quick, especially when I join an org.
Actually, on that point quickly, the sales tech stack you guys are running.
Sure. So Salesforce is our CRM. And we layer on top of that Groove for our account executives. Our SDRs are using Outreach. But all across the sales org, we're using Gong, we're using Troops. And for sales ops, we're using a tool called Sonar.
What does Sonar do?
Sure. Sonar connects to the metadata of Salesforce. So you could easily see when fields are added or fields are changed. But more importantly, when you go into the CRM to make changes like remove a field, you're able to see which workflow rules or where that which automated pieces that touches. And it really helps, you know, save a lot of pain if you accidentally remove a pick list value. You can see where it was referenced elsewhere in your setup. So that's certainly saved us a lot of headaches.
Got it.
Now tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello, Sales Ops people. Tom here. I'm recording this because we literally just launched what we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of Sales Ops insights. We've created the Sales Ops Handbook that you can get at evster.com/sales-ops-handbook. And what we essentially did is from our first 30 interviews, we collated all of the best insights from people such as Jeff at Intercom, from people at DocuSign, Lucid, Oracle, and Crowdcube. And we've crammed them into an approximately 45-page ebook, which, as I said, we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of sales ops wisdom in the world. So you can go to evster.com/sales-ops-handbook, and you can get that for simply entering your email address.
And then back to this automated contracting process without any expensive tools. So you're running that whole thing within Salesforce, using no other external software?
Yeah, so there are some tools that sit on top of it. But like our contract generating piece, we've used things like Conga Composer or Drawloop, Nintex Drawloop in the past to generate the documents themselves. And of course, your e-signature tool. So you know, your DocuSigns or the PandaDocs or what have you, those certainly sit within there. But being able to merge in fields from your Salesforce data and then sending that out for e-signature has been huge. But yeah, utilizing that, utilizing the visual flow, or I believe they call it lightning flow now, to have like guided step-by-step screens has really helped folks increase their productivity.
Got it. So previously, would a rep be like, oh, I need to send a contract. They'd like get Word ready and they start typing stuff out from Salesforce and then they'd like format to a PDF and then email it. Is that what would happen?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Cool. And then
if you didn't have like the most recent Word template downloaded and you're sending old language or like a contract with the wrong address on it, that could be pretty bad.
Yeah. And so now the reps are simply pressing a few buttons in Salesforce.
That's right. Yep.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. And next I want to move on to, well, let's see if the forecasting process is as streamlined.
Yeah. So where I'm at right now, it's really not all that built out. And that's one of the things that I've been focusing on adjusting. So I'm relatively new to Seven Rooms. So really need to increase our adoption of some of the systems that we have here. And part of that is our Salesforce opportunity process. So our forecasting isn't great right now. We're doing a lot of stuff outside of the system using spreadsheets, but I'm working with some of the different sales leaders to change that a bit. And yeah, we're going to move to a more biweekly cadence to do our pipeline and forecasting reviews once we have all of our data in our systems.
Got it. Okay. So there's going to be a biweekly meeting or just a biweekly forecasting?
Yeah, so it's going to be kind of two different setups. So like the second week of the month, we're going to do our early forecast for the month and review the pipeline, like the later stage deals and see what is closing in. And then the last week of the month, hold like a new forecasting call for that month just to see what movement has taken place over the past 2 weeks and get like really good eyes on how we're going to end up with that month.
Got it. So the first week is the reviewing current pipeline and the final week is more looking at new pipeline.
That's right.
Cool. And who's in those meetings?
So it's our sales leaders. And right now we're small enough where we have all of our sales leaders and our sales reps in there as well. So yeah, it's
so you have nearly around 60 people in the meeting.
About that. Yeah. I mean, it's cozy, but it's not that massive just yet.
Yeah, I remember we stopped having the reps come to this meeting because it wasn't there were too many people. It was just there was too many voices. Not saying anything bad about salespeople, of course. awesome. And then next up is interacting with the reps. I'm assuming you've developed a way of working with salespeople as you've been doing it for a while now. Any tips on how you can manage or influence reps to do something that might not be directly related to their goals?
Yeah. So, I mean, that whole getting them to do something that may directly help them is a challenge. And like in prior life, I'd always take the WIFM approach, right? The what's in it for me. But you're not always going to have something like that. So early on in my career, again, showing my personality, I try to interact with folks and like earn their trust so early on so that they know I truly am there to help them be as successful as they can. So after earning their trust and working with them and like partnering with them on a lot of these different things, that's really helped out quite a bit. And like having empathy is a huge thing. So I know I could be very direct and very cold at times when I need certain things done. And I always need to remind myself to be empathetic when asking folks to do things. So I think that's a very helpful tip in when rolling out a new process or a new tool. But then like always getting a ton of feedback, never shutting the door, always listening and understanding what their pains are. It doesn't mean you're going to change things, but like, again, going back to that empathy, understanding what the pains are, really working with small groups to roll out changes and have them sell it internally and have them be your champions for you. It's almost like you're doing internal sales at that point. Well, I guess it literally is doing internal sales.
Yeah, you're selling. Cool. And then if you could only measure one sales-related metric for the rest of your career, which would you choose?
For me, it would be stage conversion. And it's not just like your close rates or your win rates, but like the individual stages in your selling process. And I think by measuring that, you could really identify different areas in the sales process where either more coaching or like it's really telling. So like either you need to coach reps in different areas of their selling, or it could be things about like your market and your pricing is way off. I think if I had to choose one, that would be it.
Got it. And you came straight out with that. And normally I surprise people with that one, but you must have listened to previous episodes and you know that I'm asking it like every time now. Got it. And so the insights you can get, and so this might be like from stage two to stage three, you can see if a rep might not be performing, but also more macro trends, like maybe your pricing is too high because the conversion rate from revealing the pricing discussion to the next stage is too low.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, if there are things off in like, you know, when you're reviewing your contracts or in later stage negotiations, that could be a very different story that it's telling.
Sure. Cool. And the final question, who has been the most influential person in your sales ops career?
So I have a few, if that's okay.
Hit me.
All right. So the first one who really started me on this track isn't necessarily a sales ops ninja per se, but like just it was somebody who I worked alongside with. We were cubicle mates way back in the day when I was early in my career. And he was like a very organized, kind of like geeky type of guy. But like there were certain topics that would get him to open up, like especially cars. Like I love BMWs. So it was great. But the point is that the way that he was so organized and so detailed, that when he would lead these projects, he was managing up quite a bit. And like being in a sales operations role, like some of the things that I enjoy is that you touch many different levels in the org. So like I would just sit there and marvel at how he was able to talk to like an SVP of different departments that were like 18 levels above where we were, but like be able to get them engaged and be able to execute. I thought that was really interesting. His name is Matt Chulik. But two other folks that that I've really learned a lot from by really just watching and engaging with their content. One is Doug Landis, who works at a VC now, but he did enablement over at Boxed and Salesforce and Google. You might have heard of those companies. And finally, Marco Savic over at Funnelcake. Really enjoyed the content that he's been putting out, and I've been fortunate enough to have a few conversations with him and really likes how he approaches sales operations.
Got it. So I got Matt Chulik, Doug Landis, and Marco Savic.
Yep.
Got it. And Marco's at Funnelcake. Awesome. Yeah. Yep. And yeah, I do agree with your point about sales ops, speaking with people from FDRs all the way to like head of sales, all the way to CEO. Totally agree. Dan, let me read out a couple of the things I thought were particularly impactful in this interview. The first, and I really like this, we haven't heard this before, but I urge people listening to tweak your onboarding process to allow sales to get a more holistic view of the business. I think that can have massive benefits down the road. And then I also liked the metric stage conversion, and it's actually a multiple metrics, right? But the fact that it can give you insights from whether a rep is just performing all the way up to maybe your pricing is not working. So those are the two big things. And I'm sure that they have added a massive value to the audience. So thank you so much, Dan, for your time.
Tom, thank you so much. This has been awesome.